And this is the Jefferson Exchange on JPR. A moment of silence at the White House last night and lowered flags on federal facilities through this week and on Oregon state facilities as well are meant to remember the people who died from COVID-19. We just hit a milestone. 500,000 Americans have died from the disease, more than a fifth of the world's death total. The news comes as vaccines continue to be administered around the country. Once a week, we check in with Dr. Jim Shames, medical director at Jackson County Health and Human Services, for an overview of current events and answers to our questions. You can join in at 800-838-3760 on the phone. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Dr. Shames, welcome back.
Good morning, Jeffrey. Glad to be here.
Good to have you. Liz in Talent emailed, I think she was hoping for a longer segment, but she does bring up the Oregonians' coverage of the fact that it looks like Oregon is third to last in vaccinating seniors, and I wonder what you make of that.
You know, my understanding is that Oregon's doing fairly well in getting vaccines in arms. The governor made a decision, you know, quite a while ago now, that we would put teachers first. It was controversial, but, you know, the theory was we've got to get kids back to school. And if we miss this window of opportunity, we're going to kind of miss it for quite some time. So once that decision was made, it's probably true that those over 65 you know, we're lagging behind states that didn't make that decision. I think we're catching up pretty fast. And, all I can say is it's been a couple extra weeks of wait. And I think all of us feel pretty bad about that. But the vaccine is here and it's coming in increasing amounts within the next few weeks.
So officially, as of yesterday, people 70 and older are now eligible for vaccination in Oregon. And I see that, according to the Oregon Health Authority, the state is on pace to administer first doses to 75% of all eligible people by early April. But the eligible people is the real catchphrase there, isn't it? Because the fact is that eligibility is a long list of people getting into line just to be eligible for the shots in the first place, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's not everybody wants the shots. Also, there's unfortunately that that's a major factor, and so that is helping us get the vaccine in the arms of those that want it. Unfortunately, it means that a fair number of people are not wanting it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So again, if people are interested in finding out about where to get a vaccine, 211. I know this was discussed in the previous segment about help with wildfires, too, but that's a great new information set up for Oregon. If you desperately want to know something, but you don't want to call 911 and shouldn't, you should call 211 to find out where things stand. We have another question here from Janet, no town given, and this is generally about Latino and undocumented Alameda fire survivors. Question one, can or will Alameda fire survivors be first to receive vaccines as a result of the declaration of a federal disaster area and helping the marginalized and most vulnerable people in our community? Let's go with that one first. I mean, is there any particular focus on Alameda fire survivors getting a jump in the line?
That would be a governor's decision, and that may very well be that there'll be some consideration of that made once we get past the 65-year-olds. We are working diligently to make sure that those with special needs, those that are generally underserved, those that are displaced, have access to vaccination. So as we look at the landscape, we want to make sure that certain communities, certain languages, certain ethnicities are made accessible to the vaccine when possible. And we're doing that in lieu of anything that the governor might specifically put forward in terms of targeting specific populations ahead of others.
Well, and Janet asks some specific questions about whether it's possible to have nurses of color who speak Spanish. Can we have all information in Spanish as well? Will vaccines be in a safe and accessible location? That's a bit of a compound, but let's start with the part about people who speak Spanish and information delivered in Spanish.
This comes up every day, and we're looking at it in terms of who answers the phone, in terms of having it be friendly and warming and inviting for people of a certain culture. And it's a multi-factored issue. What I can say is we're not only working on it, but we're working on it with people who live that lifestyle. That is to say, we have people who are culturally and bilingual, working with us on a daily basis to make sure that we get it right. But it's a lot of moving parts. And I don't mean to try and evade the question. I just want to be clear that it kind of has infiltrated every aspect of what we're trying to accomplish.
Well, yeah, I was thinking about that. You know, Janet kind of gets onto this as well. The idea that, you know, if you speak English, you have a car and you have access to the web,
right.
Getting notified
right.
about the vaccine are pretty English. Miss any one of those three or all, you know, or two or
right.
three, and you're really kind of in a different square to start with.
Right. That's absolutely right. And that's exactly the kind of stuff we're thinking about. So for example, we have set up a community-wide, high-throughput, collaborative vaccine clinic. You can access it through our website, through 211. It's going to be operational starting Thursday. Now, that's going to be most useful for people who are savvy on the internet or are comfortable waiting on the phone, have a car, can make appointments. That's not everybody. And so as good as this particular clinic we're hoping will be, we need to make sure that we have vaccine opportunities in the Upper Rogue area, in places where the Latino community generally would congregate and feel comfortable, that there's opportunities to have people speaking your language when you call to find out more or to make an appointment. So completely agree. Not, you know, one size does not fit all.
All right. So not just making sure it's in the language, but also in the location. I mean, you're looking for where the people who speak Spanish are going
right.
to be. Okay.
Right.
Randy in Roosh writes in to say, 211 referred my wife to Asante and the Asante options didn't work.
Okay. By not work, maybe that means it wasn't operational. That could be. It should be operational now.
Mm-hmm.
That is to say that I know that the telephone number that's listed for Asante, which, by the way, is ultimately going to be the connection for the community clinic, should be operational now.
Mm-hmm.
And just to clarify that a bit, we've got somewhere in the teens, maybe 12 to 15 people answering phones around the clock, making schedules. Well, I don't know about around the clock. I don't know about that part. But certainly there's a certain number of people dedicated to making appointments through this phone line now. So I would say try again.
All right. Janet, who has a very fast hand on the keyboard, thank you for that, Janet, wrote back to ask about the clinic you mentioned. Where is the clinic? And does that clinic not help Latinos?
We're talking about the high throughput community
yes,
clinic?
Yes.
Yeah. Excuse me. It's in Medford.
Mm-hmm.
It's at the Black Oak site at Asante. It's capable of gearing up and gearing down depending on the amount of vaccine. So at this point, the amount of throughput for that clinic is totally dependent upon how much vaccine we get. So it's kind of operating at a maybe 500 person a day level now and could probably double if we had the vaccine for it. It is not Latino friendly at the moment in the sense that you have to, you know, get linked up to a translator and we are really working hard on fixing that piece of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's certainly open to everybody. And one approach may be that we will have block scheduling so that people can go to a number of different sites where they can easily have a conversation and then make sure they're scheduled, and when they show up that there are people who speak their language and that they're comfortable interfacing with, kind of building this plane while we're flying it.
But okay. Yeah. Yeah. Janet concludes, please hire people who can relate. Please. We have money. We need to feel comfortable. So thank you again, Janet, for keeping us posted on.
Just say one more word. Mm-hmm. We completely understand that. And there really, truly has been daily conversations about exactly that. Hiring people, you know, paying them well, getting the right people in the position kind of moving fairly quickly in that regard.
Dr. Jim Shames from Jackson County Health and Human Services, Medical Director, our guest once again on the Jefferson Exchange, answering questions about the pandemic and the vaccines. You can join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. All right, so when we talked to you a week ago, there was a lot of issue with vaccines trying to get through storms, which is not the issue this week. So does it appear you have more on the way, or what do you know?
We got the vaccine we expected for last week and this week. So they kind of, you know, there was a bump in the road related to the storms. Mm-hmm. It is, and we're expecting there to be a slight increase, small increase next week. It still means that we sort of have to be careful allocating vaccine. You know, we can't just open the floodgates and everybody can get as much as they want.
Mm-hmm.
We're in about the same position we've been in for the last couple of weeks.
Really. So based on I'm only guessing based on the mass vaccination events, so you get like about 6,000 doses a week or something like that?
Public health, I think, is getting around, I think we got about 1,300 and we're expecting maybe 1,600. But vaccine is going directly to La Clinica.
Mm-hmm.
Vaccine is going directly to some pharmacies. So there's... You know, there's a number of other places, and I actually don't know the total number that comes in for first doses to Jackson County. I don't know that number.
All right. Let's take a call here from Ann in Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dr. Jim Shames.
Thank you. So I spent my first half of my life living in poverty without medical insurance. I didn't go to the doctor unless the situation was absolutely desperate. So my reading is that people who are having trouble breathing and they finally get medical attention, that those people are less likely to survive. And that's why I think our for-profit health system has caused at least 250,000 of the deaths in the United States. Thank you.
Thank you, Ann. Appreciate that. Jim, any comment?
We definitely need a healthcare system where everybody has access to the healthcare they need, regardless of how much money they have. So I completely agree with that. It would be my goal as well.
Okay. So I want to come back to vaccinations, particularly mass vaccinations. Is that going to happen again, or was the first and second round events out at the Expo Park it for a while?
You know, we have four basic strategies for how we're going to deliver vaccine. If we have enough vaccine, we want to have episodic mass vaccination events. They were so successful. It was a slick process. Again, one size doesn't fit all, but that certainly would get a lot of vaccine out. We don't have enough for that yet. The second is the high throughput daily or almost daily clinic that's being set up primarily through the work of Providence, Asante, and Public Health at the Asante site. And that is going to be a way to sort of have it be equitable and have it be kind of fairly high throughput depending on how much vaccine. But that is being stood up. It's actually being augmented. It's already stood up. And we're hoping that will take care of a lot of the need. We're pushing vaccine and assisting others to reach out to particular groups in need, so that the homebound elderly, those that don't drive, those that don't speak English, you know, those that have to work all day and can't take time off, we're doing our best to try and make sure that those groups specifically get access to vaccine. And then finally, we're trying to partner with the independent pharmacies, the parallel track, the VA and others, and make sure that we all know what we're doing so that we can have a large-scale, community-wide strategic plan.
All right, so everybody knows what everybody else is doing. That would help, wouldn't
right.
it? Call from Pete in Jacksonville. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dr. Jim Shames.
Well, thank you very much for this program. Sure appreciate it as a reliable source of information. So because I'm a volunteer and I was contacted lately by the states because my certification had lapsed, I started doing a more intensive study of the vaccine, and I need some help in understanding things. My impression is that the vaccine will reduce the serious effects. Basically, it'll keep people who otherwise would have needed hospitalization to survive, it would keep them from passing away. So it really will, for many of us, for the majority of us, it'll be letting the body have a chance to fight off the infection rather than being overwhelmed by it. Is that an accurate assessment of what the vaccine's going to do for us?
Yes, but more. I mean, when you look at the results of the studies that were done before the vaccines were placed on market, 95% of the people who got the vaccine in the test arm had no symptoms at all. They had no symptoms of COVID. Additionally, of the 5% that had symptoms, none of those people ended up seriously ill in the sense that none of them were hospitalized and none of them died. That is remarkably successful. So, yes, it will prevent you from getting serious disease and death, but it also prevents the vast majority of people from getting any symptoms at all. What we aren't clear about is how the variants will affect that equation. It looks as if more people will become symptomatic, but it still seems quite protective in terms of keeping people from being hospitalized or dying. And we also don't know exactly to what extent you might still be able to transmit the disease to others, even though you have no symptoms. The vaccine is clearly helping on all those fronts, but you know exact percentages and how it changes as the virus changes is still a bit of a moving target.
All right. So for our last 30 seconds, I mean, if you've had both shots, and I know you have, don't go out and start hugging all your friends. It is not like that.
No, because you still could inadvertently be passing the disease. You could pick it up, have no symptoms, pass it on to another. So for the time being, we're still masking, we're still distancing. But the opportunities for getting together and being a little more intimate with those that are fully vaccinated, we're getting there.
We are getting there. Okay, we'll cover the progress again in a conversation next week. Dr. Jim Shames is the medical director at Jackson County Health and Human Services. Thanks for joining us once again to get peppered with questions.
You bet.